Okay, so this is a test I'm starting to formulate over here. Here we go. I had seen that afternoon every single rock, every outcrop, every single tree. I was fascinated by the different seasons. The way the land changes when it is plowed, when the crops start germinating, that is when drew me. This is what drew me to the work of the Thomas Hardy. His description of the English landscape, which go on the pages on the end. I was doing the same in my head with the world around me. Even today, it is like a video in my head. If I want, I can replay the whole thing. Those years and years of all that I observed with vivid clarity. I was diehard skeptic. Even at the age of 5, when my family went to the temple, I had questions, lots of them. Who is God? Where is he? Up there? Where is up? A couple of years later, I had even more questions. In school, they said the planet was round, but if the planet was round, how did one know which way was up? No one ever managed to answer that these questions, so I never entered the temple. This means they were compelled to leave me in the custody of the footwear attendant outside. The attendant held me by the arm in a vice-like grip, pulling and tugging me around with him as he did his business. He knew that if he looked the other way, I'd be gone. Later in my life, I couldn't help noticing the people coming out of restaurants always had more joyful faces than those coming out of temples. That intrigued me. And yet, while I was skeptic, I never identified with that label either. I had lots of questions about everything, but never felt the need to draw any conclusions. I realized very early that I knew nothing about anything. That meant I ended up paying enormous attention to everything around me. If someone gave me a glass of water, I had stared at it endlessly. If I picked up a leaf, I stared at it endlessly too. I started at the darkness of all night. If I looked at a pebble, the image would rotate, interminably in my mind, so I would know its very grain, its very angle. I also saw that language was no more than a conspiracy devised by human beings. If someone spoke, I realized that they were only making sounds and I was making up the meanings. So I stopped making up meanings and sounds became very amusing. I could see patterns spewing out of their mouths. If I kept staring, the person would just disintegrate and turn into a blob of energy. Then all that was left was patterns. In this state of absolute borderless ignorance, just about anything could hold my attention. My father, being a physician, began to think I needed psychiatric evaluation. In his words, "This boy is staring unblinkingly." Okay. "This boy is staring unblinkingly at something all the time. He's lost it." It has always seemed to me odd that the world does not realize the immensity of the state of I do not know. Those who destroy the state of a state with beliefs and assumptions completely miss an enormous possibility. The possibility of knowing. They forget that I do not know is the doorway, the only doorway to seeking and knowing. My mother instructed me to pay attention to my teachers. My mother instructed me to pay attention to my teachers, and I did. I paid them the kind of attention they would never have received anywhere else. I had no idea what they were saying, but on those occasions when I occasions when I attended the class, I stared at them unwavering and intense. For some reason, they did not find this trait particularly endearing. One particular teacher did everything possible to elicit a response from me, but when I remained silent and taciturn, he seized me by the shoulder and shook me violently. "Either you are the divine or the devil," he declared. He added, "And I think you are the latter." I was not particularly insulted until that moment. I had approached everything around me from a grain of sand to the universe with a sense of wonder, but there had always been one certainty in this complex of web questions, and that was me. But my teacher's outburst triggered another line of inquiry. Who was I? Human, divine, devil? What? I tried to stare at myself to find out. It didn't work, so I closed my eyes and tried to find out. Minutes turned to hours and continued to sit, eyes closed. When my eyes were open, everything intrigued me. An ant, a leaf, clouds, flowers, darkness, just about anything. But to my amazement, I found that with my eyes closed, there was even more that grabbed my attention. The way the body pulses, the way different organs function, the various channels along which one's inner energy moves, the manner in which the anatomy is aligned, the fact that the boundaries are limited to the external world. This exercise opened up the entire mechanics of being human before me, instead of leading me to a simplistic answer that I was this or that. It gradually brought me to a realization that if I were willing, I could be everything. It wasn't about arriving at any conclusions. Even the certainty of me collapsed as a deeper sense of what it is to be a human being started opening up. From knowing myself as an autonomous person, this exercise melted me down. I became a nebulous being. Despite all my wild ways, the one thing I did manage to do in a strangely disciplined fashion was my practice of yoga. It started one summer vacation when I was 12. A whole bunch of us cousins met every year in grandfather's ancestral home. In the backyard, there stood an old well over 150 feet deep. While the girls played hide and seek, the regular games played by us boys was to jump into the well and then climb up again. Both jumping down and climbing up were challenges, but if you didn't do it properly, your brains could become a smear on the wall. While you were climbing up, there were no steps. You simply had to clutch at the rock surface, claw yourself up. The fingernails often bled out of sheer pressure. Just a few of the boys could do this. I was one of them. I was pretty good at it. One day, a man of over 70 years of age appeared. He watched us for a while. Without a word, he jumped into the well. We thought he was finished, but he climbed up quicker than me. I cast aside my pride and asked him just one question. "How?" "Come learn yoga," said the old man. I followed him like a puppy, and that's how I became a student of Malladihalli Swami, as this old man was known, and got into yoga. In the past, waking me up every morning was a family project. My family would try to make me sit up in bed. I would kneel over and fall asleep again. My mother would hand me my toothbrush. I would stick it into my mouth and fall asleep. In desperation, she would put me into the bathroom. I would promptly fall asleep again. But 3 months after starting yoga, my blood started coming awake at 3:40 every morning without any external prompting, as it does even today. After I woke up, my practices would simply happen no matter where I was and in what situation, without a single day's break. The simple yoga called Angamurdana, a system of physical yoga that strengthens sinews and limbs. Okay. Definitely set me apart in any group of people, physically and mentally, but that's about all, or so I believe. In time, I lost all faith in structured education. It wasn't cynicism. I had thought, I had enough zest and life in me to keep me involved in everything. But my dominant quality, even at this age, was clarity. I was not actively looking for inconsistencies or loopholes in anything I was taught. I just saw them. I have never looked for anything in my life. I just look, and that is what I am trying to teach people now. If you really want to know spirituality, don't look for anything. People think spirituality is about looking for God or truth or the ultimate. The problem is you have already defined what you are looking for. It is not the object of your search that is important. It is the faculty of looking, the ability to simply look, motive, look without motive, is missing in the world today. Everybody is a psychological creature, wanting to assign meaning to everything. Seeking is not about looking for something. It is about enhancing your perception, your very faculty of seeking. Seeing is not about looking for something. Okay, I'm gonna underline this here, if you guys can understand it. After high school, I embarked on self-study program at the Mysore University Library. I was the first person there in the morning at 9 and the last to be shooed out at 8:30 at night. Between breakfast and dinner, my only sustenance was books. Although I was always ravenous, I skipped lunch for a whole year. I read widely, from Homer to Popular Mechanics, Kafka to Kalidasa, Dante to Dennis the Menace. I emerged from that 1 year more knowledgeable, but with more questions than ever before. My mother's tears compelled me to enroll grudgingly in the Mysore University as a student of English literature. But I continue to carry the cloud of billion questions like a dark halo around me all the time. Neither the library nor my professors could dispel it. Once again, I spent most of my time outside the classroom rather than in it. I found that all that was happening in class was the dictation of notes. I was definitely not planning to be a stenographer. I once asked a lecturer to give me her notes so I could. Okay. I once asked a lecturer to give me her notes so I could photocopy them. It would save her the trouble of dictation and me the trouble of attending. Finally, I made a deal with all the teachers, who were more than happy not to have me in class. On each day of the month, they would mark me present in the class. On the last day of the month, the attendance was registered. That day, I would enter and just make sure they were keeping up with their end of bargain. A group of us started meeting under a huge banyan tree on the campus ground. Someone named it the Banyan Tree Club, and the label stuck. The club had a motto: we do it for the fun of it. We would assemble under the tree on our motorcycles, talk for hours on a variety of subjects, from how to make Java motorcycles go faster than they did to how to make the world a better place. Of course, we would never get off our motorcycles at any point. That would have been a sacrifice. Sacrilege. By the time I was done with university, I had ridden all over the country. Initially, I traveled South India on my bicycle. Later, I crisscrossed the entire country on my motorcycle. Then it was natural to cross the national borders But when I reached the India-Nepal frontier, I was told that my motorcycle registration and driving license weren't enough. I needed more papers. After that, it became my dream to somehow earn enough money to travel the world on my motorcycle. It wasn't just wanderlust. The truth is, I was restless. I wanted to know something. I didn't know what, and I didn't know where I needed to go to get it. But in my innermost being, I knew I wanted more. I never considered myself particularly impulsive. I was just life-oriented. I measured the consequences of my actions. It is just that the more dangerous they were, the more they attracted me. Someone once told me, my guardian angel must be very good and perpetually working overtime. There was always in my a longing to test the border, to cross the edge. What and why was never questioned for me. How was the only question? When I look back now, I realize that I have never thought about what I wanted to become in life. I only thought about how I wanted to live my life. And I knew that the how could only be determined within me and by me. There was a big boom in the poultry farming at the time. I wanted to make some money to finance my desire for unrestrained, purposeless travel. So I got into it. My father said, what am I going to tell people, that my son is rearing chickens? But I built my poultry farm, and I built it single-handedly from scratch. The business took off. The profits started rolling in. I devoted 4 hours every morning to the business. The rest of the day was spent reading and writing poetry, swimming in the well, meditating, daydreaming on a huge banyan tree. Success made me adventurous. My father was always lamenting that everyone else's son had become engineers, industrialists. Sorry, I have a twisted, crooked teeth, you can say. Continuing. Joined the civil service or gone to America. And everywhere, everyone I met, my friends, relatives, my old school and college teachers said, oh, we thought you'd make something of your life, but you're just wasting it. I took on the challenge in partnership with a civil engineer friend. I entered the construction business. In 5 years, we became a major construction company, among the leading private contractors in Mysore. My father was incredulous and delighted. I was exuberant and sure-footed, adrenaline charged and itching for a challenge. When everything you do is a success, you tend to start believing that the planets revolve around you, not the sun. And that was the kind of young man I was that fateful afternoon of September 1982 when I decided to go on my Czech motorcycle and ride up Chamundi Hill. I had no clue then that my life would never be the same again. Later, when I tried to talk to my friends about what had happened that day up on the mountain, all they could ask was, did you drink something? Did you pop something? They were even more clueless when I was on this new dimension that had suddenly exploded into my life. Even before I had begun to process what it meant, the experience returned. It was a week later. I was sitting at the dinner table with my family. I thought it lasted 2 minutes, but it was 7 hours. I was sitting right there, fully aware, except that the me I knew as myself was not there anymore. Everything else was, and the time flipped. I remember various members of my family tapping on my shoulder, asking me what happened, urging me to eat my meal. I simply raised my hand, asked them to leave. They were accustomed to my strange ways by then. They left me alone. It was 4:15 in the morning when I returned to my normal senses. The experience began to happen more frequently. When it occurred, I neither ate nor slept for hours on end. I simply sat rooted to a single spot. On one occasion, the experience lasted for up to 13 days. I happened to be in a village where it began, and the state of overwhelming and indescribable stillness and ecstasy. The villagers gathered around me and started whispering to each other, "Oh, he must be in Samadhi, a blissful state of being beyond the state, beyond the body, and well documented in Indian spiritual traditions." India being the country it is, there was a traditional understanding of spirituality to which they were heir, that I, with my blue denim wrapped brain, had no clue about. When I emerged from that state, someone wanted to put a garland around me. Another wanted to touch my feet. It was crazy. I could not believe anyone would want to do this to me. Okay. On another day, I was having lunch. I put a morsel of food in my mouth, and suddenly it exploded. At that moment, I was able to experience the miraculous alchemy of human digestion, the process by which an external substance, a piece of planet, was becoming a part of me. We all know this intellectually, that a part of planet nourishes us, and our bodies in turn one day return to nourish the very same earth that was sustained, that once sustained us. But when the knowledge dawned experimentally, it altered my fundamental perspective of who I was. My relationship with everything around me, including the planet we went through a dimensional shift. Alright. I grew aware of that extraordinary intelligence within each of us that is capable of transforming a piece of bread or an apple into the human body in a single afternoon. Not a small feat, as I began consciously touching the intelligence, which is a source of creation. Seemingly inexplicable events started occurring around me. Things that I touched were transformed in some ways or the other. People would look at me and burst into tears. Many claimed that they were relieved of conditions of physical and mental sufferings just by looking at me. I found myself healed in a matter of hours of conditions that would have taken me months to get out of through normal medical care. However, I gave up all the little importances. This ability to transform my external and internal reality quite dramatically has continued within me and around me to this very day. It is not something I have ever tried consciously to achieve. It is just that once one is in touch with this deeper dimension of intelligence, which is the very basic of our existence here, life turns quite naturally miraculous. In about 6 to 8 weeks, this incredible experience became a living reality. During this time, everything about me changed dramatically. My physical appearance, the shape of my eyes, my gait, my voice, the very alignment of my body began changing so drastically that people around me started to notice as well. What was happening inside me was even more phenomenal. Within 6 weeks, a huge flood of memory descended, literally lifetime of memories. I was now aware of million different things happening inside me in a single moment. It was like a kaleidoscope. My logical mind told me none of this could be true. What I was seeing inside myself was clearer than daylight, but I secretly hoped it was false. I had always seen myself as a smart young man. Suddenly, I appeared to be a clueless young fool, and that bewilderment with something I could not come to terms with. But I found my chagrin that everything my memory was telling me was true. Until this time, I had completely refused to accept anything in my life that did not fit into a rational and logical framework. Slowly, I began to realize that it is the life that is ultimate intelligence. Human intellect is mere smartness that ensures survival. But true intelligence is just life and life, and that which is the source of life, nothing else. Okay, the world has been told that the divine is love, that the divine is compassion, but if you pay attention to creation, you realize that the divine, or wherever is the source of creation, is above all, the highest intelligence that you can imagine. Instead of trying to tap into all-powerful intelligence that pulsates within each of us, we opt to use our logical intellect, which is useful in certain situations but essentially limited. I also began to experience a heightened sensitivity to the feeling of others. Sometimes just the sight of an unknown person on the street in a state of grief could make me weep. I could not believe the state of misery that human beings were capable of enduring when here I was simply bursting with ecstasy for no reason at all. It took a while for me to realize that what was happening to me was something spiritual. I began to understand that what the sacred traditions and scriptures had extolled as the ultimate experience was happening to me, that I was experiencing, in fact, the most beautiful thing that can happen to a human being. Moment to moment, every cell in my body was exploding with nameless ecstasies. Right now, people glorify childhood because a child can laugh and be happy for no reason at all. But I saw that it is possible to be ecstatic in one's adulthood as well. It is possible for every human being because we can all ever experience happens within us.